listening to the Rugby Coach's Corner podcast with your host, Andy Plimer. Bringing you up-to-date coaching concepts from the world of rugby. Sharing ideas to make the game better.
All right, welcome to episode number 66 of the Rugby Coaches Corner podcast. I'm your host, Andy Plimer, and joining me today is Johnny McMurtry. Originally from Ireland, Johnny is now based permanently in Brisbane, Australia, where he has been involved in numerous coaching roles since 2010, including junior club, Colts, as well as Queensland and ARU age grade programs such as the Junior Reds and Junior Gold. He's also heading up a study through the University of Queensland that looks at the needs of adolescent elite rugby players, and it's a pleasure to have him on the show, so welcome, Johnny.
Thanks very much for having me. Yeah, pretty keen to have a good chat today and things like that. Keen follower of the podcast, so thanks again.
Yeah, no worries. No, it's I'm a keen follower of your blog too, so we'll touch on that later. But you're putting out some really good stuff, and I think it was when I heard about your research paper, I thought, oh, beauty, we'll definitely have to connect and get you on. So it's great to chat to you, and let's start with how you got into rugby originally, and how that end up turning into coaching.
Obviously from the accent you could tell, born and brought up in the North of Ireland. So like many, I joined or started playing rugby predominantly when I joined high school, grammar school. Mm-hmm. Played for both club and in Bangor, just towards Belfast there for Bangor, both Bangor Rugby Club and Bangor Grammar School.
Okay.
Throughout that time, I was lucky enough to get selected for Ulster Clubs under 16, 18 squads, but as I sadly didn't make the cut to progress to any Irish squads, but anyway, that's more down to my talent than anything else. And then I was fortunate enough to, I went to Wales for university, went to the somewhat famous UIC, or Cardiff Met is what it's mm-hmm. called now, so mm-hmm. a bit of a rugby hub there. So that gave me a real sort of insight into probably quality coaching as well, like there's blokes like Chris Davey there and things like that. So, you know, it gave me a sort of insight into, and obviously they do a lot of research around there as well. So, but then I sort of drifted out of the uni rugby scene and went on to a small club through a flatmate, started playing age grade or under 20s for Ebbw Vale there right in the middle of in Wales as well. So that was a bit of a learning curve as well, speaking to the Valley boys. So, fortunately enough as well, made connections with Ron Preston, who was a New Zealand Maori in his day. He actually came over and played at Bangor Rugby Club, did a bit of coaching there as well.
Cool.
So he was fortunate enough, he invited me over to Rotorua. So I spent a bit of time and that did the traveling bit as well. But I was real lucky to get involved in, that was my first sort of jaunt outside. We're playing club rugby outside of Ireland. Or Ireland and Wales, sorry, but started looking towards Australia for work. Mm-hmm. Was fortunate enough to land a bit of work in starting off in Melbourne, where I started playing for the Melbourne Harlequins down there.
I
was fortunate enough to spend about a season and a half, two seasons for that. But I eventually moved to Brisbane for love. She's still my love now. So my now wife was flying up and down. So I was able to transfer work up to Brisbane. When we started talking, she obviously understood my passion for my wife Diana understood my passion for rugby. And we thought that the lesser of two evils at this stage would be coaching, which unbeknownst to her started off quite small.
Probably three times the amount of time.
That's it. Yeah. Initially, at one stage, she really looked at me and goes, "Are you kidding?" It was starting to be 7 days a week with involved in club and representative things and things like that. And that's where again I was really fortunate to get a start. I was fairly inexperienced, obviously, as a coach. Logan Saints took me on, did some age grade stuff down there, moved on to. I was asked to join up as part of the Junior Reds development squad, which then turned into the Junior Gold squad and now the Junior Gold Cup. So I was involved in that for about 7 or 8 years. And in between that, did a bit of Colts coaching at University of Queensland as well. Another really sort of strong environment, strong name, obviously, in the Brisbane rugby scene as well. But yeah, that's really predominantly it. You know, as I say, it was just a passion. It's a real sort of passion. It's you know, part of my identity and part of, you know, sometimes sadly our family's identity as well. So as much as my wife might grumble and complain, especially Six Nations time of year when I'm waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Awesome. And what how'd those first coaching experiences go, and what kind of coach do you call yourself now if someone was to come and watch what you do?
I think everyone starts off, you know, everyone starts off with great intentions, but mm-hmm. you know, I mean, we're fairly rigid, and you know, I mean, we like to have everything laid out and you know, I mean, fairly well organized and things like that. And of course, being an age grade coach, it's, you know, I mean, I was fortunate enough, I was looking after 16, 17 year old players, and they're, don't get me wrong, fantastic group of players, but yeah, I was possibly slightly offbeat with them mm-hmm. in regards to offering them exactly what they wanted. But again, experience, time sort of give me a much better perspective on how to coach and why you do certain things a different way. Mm-hmm. Again, you'll march up with a great plan and things like that, but something will happen. You know, I mean, all these kids are people, and especially the age grade that, you know, I mean, I like to focus on and target that sort of 16 up to 20 years of age. Mm. They've all got a lot of, it's a real melting pot of emotions a lot of the time and things like that. So you can have your star halfback or fly half turning up, but he's just, you know, he's got exams on, broken up with a girlfriend, or there could be 101 things going on. So it's as opposed to, you know, I mean, being really tight as I used to be, you know, I mean, on how things are going to go and why. I guess it's more of that, you know, I mean, softly approach, and you know, really trying to level on to a lot of players one on one, and trying to reap the benefits that way as well. So.
Yeah, cool. All right, well, let's talk about your masters that you're doing through University of Queensland. You're conducting a research project there in conjunction with Rugby Australia, and yep. you're looking at age grade high performance players. What's a bit of a summary for listeners about your study, about your research project, and how it's been rolled out? What's the cohort of players that you've been working with, and those kind of things?
Yeah, cool. Well, yeah, again, the reason I started this is I've got a young family. Well, it's like he's getting older now. So my son, whom I coached, you know, I mean, in his early days, he's now 16. Mm-hmm. He actually dropped out of rugby union twice. You know, he went back to it and came out again. And again, it was just through probably a miscommunication or overzealous coaching styles from the environments he was involved in. So again, just sort of it took him away from it. So again, I approached, well, a combination of University of Queensland, where I was finishing off my grad dip in sports coaching. Mm-hmm. Wanted to go into further research, and speaking with them, and then Rugby Australia, speaking to people like Jason Gilmore, Adrian Thompson, who are involved in that, those high performance programs. I wanted to look at that 20-year-old bracket. So this was when it was fresh coming in. What was the Super 20?
Yep.
Now the NRC under 19s. That's sort of age grade. So mm-hmm. I wanted to focus on, it started off with one team. I was going to focus on the Reds franchise, but they liked it. You know, when I sort of pitched it to them at the University of Queensland, they liked it and said, well, can we roll this across all five? What was then five cohorts of you know, all the state sides across Australia. Which was initially a bit daunting, but at the same time, I could see value in it. You know, we really wanted to get a snapshot for why these elite age grade players are involved in the sport, what they're trying to get from their environment, from their coaches, so that then we could have that better retention, better engagement throughout those critical years. As I said, you know, where they've got a lot going on, they're leaving school, where there's it's much more driven. Obviously, there's that sense of sense of connection to the school and their friends that they represent, and then all of a sudden they're put out into the environment where, you know, they can choose a club, they can follow their friends or things like that. But again, it's all it's that difficult period of transition where some of them are trying to, I mean, go on to that elite status and push on to earn super contracts or Rugby Australia contracts, and some of them just want to drop, you know, I mean, want to settle back into a, you know, I mean, some full-time education or full-time employment and gain, yeah, just a bit of rugby on the side and things like that, and are still good enough to play in these state sides as well. So yeah, again, it was very supportive from Rugby Australia and from University of Queensland. So we conducted, we gathered all the data at two separate stages of the season. So we questioned the players while they were in the Super 20 tournament, in that high performance environment where, you know, we're trying to grasp why, what's going on, you know, why the questions are trying to ascertain what typical, you know, daily goals they're trying to achieve, you know, both within sport and away from sport. So again, we could establish that sense of connection as coaches or as high performance programs, or even and feed it out to the clubs. You know what I mean? Well, these once the players, again, for our second data collection, which was done sort of later on in the season towards September, was when they returned back to their club environment, just to see if there was any difference from when the players are involved in the high performance section of the season to when they return back to club land. And it's perceived as a bit more social. You know, the under 20 World Cup had finished. Some of the fellas had finished their commitments within the super franchise, the senior teams and things like that, and it actually returned to club land. So again, we're just trying to grab the perspective so that we could offer a portrait or a snapshot of these fellas when they're in the high performance section and when they return to club, and how we should better engage them or better interact with them at these different stages of the seasons or throughout if it was the same right way through. So
right, okay, cool. It sounds really, really fascinating, really comprehensive too. It's probably a first that's been done across all five areas, and you're due to have it wrapped up in 2019, and hopefully you're not like I was at university, where I tried to push everything to the last minute. But I'm sure you're on top of it, and your due dates are set in stone. But even though you haven't published yet or it's not finalized, what have been some of the main things that have really popped out? We talked a little bit offline about some of the key areas that have popped out. One of them was fun, enjoyment, and meaningful connections. What could you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, look, and again, some of these were somewhat expected but somewhat disappointing at the same time. So again, that like you just said, that sense of fun, enjoyment, meaningful connections, sadly we're coming away from these high performance environments. All right, so they weren't actually turning up to get involved in the Super 20 competition or even involved on a daily basis in training within this high performance environment for a sense of enjoyment. What they would go there predominantly is for is that sense of individual achievement. So it was, you could even see that in the language they were using. Obviously we did a scan on all the data and all the information and answers offered. And again, it was predominantly all the enjoy, mates, fun, all that language is coming away from those examples that I said for the goals that they're chasing away from rugby union, sadly. So again, it was good to offer that. It was good and somewhat difficult to offer that information onto the pathway coaches and the high performance coaches to say, well, look, maybe there's something around this. You know, what can we do or what can be offered to possibly try and change the structure of how these high performance environments are going as well. But at the same time, we also recognize that these fellas are in that period of transition. They need to have that individual focus. They're pushing for, potential contracts, getting involved in the senior squads and even involved as immediate as the under 20 World Cup. So there had to be that element of individual focus and ensuring they were constantly improving, constantly progressing. While it was almost disappointing on a sort of club or social level of rugby, we understood why they were offering these answers when they were involved in the high performance environments.
They were coming into these high performance environments with that attitude initially, or was it from the environment itself, or a bit of both, or could you narrow it down to? Maybe it was the environment they were coming from previously. Was there anything that jumped out there?
Possibly. Look, again, there seemed to be a lot more. So the what we identified as potentially the 18-year-olds, so some of the players who are involved in it for the first year of these programs, but there seemed to be a real individual focus, especially with them. And the 19, 20-year-olds seemed to mature and seem to be more stable in some of their language. Like the 18-year-olds were really pushing for that sense of acknowledgement, earning the respect from coaches. So again, really trying to possibly put themselves into a shop window, being their first year in these high-performance environments. Whereas the 19, 20-year-olds seem to mellow out and have a sense of maturity of, this is a progression. They understood better what they had to do. But even gone from, say, the high performance section to the social environment, again, it was less of, it was more of trying to apply what they had learned, possibly from the earlier part of the season. So then the later part of the season, when they've returned to the club land, returned to more social element of rugby union, that they were just, they're essentially just trying to play. They were trying to express what they had learned, what they had done, and things like that, if that makes sense. So, yeah.
Yeah, and from a coaching point of view, what can coaches take away from this if they know going into a situation that for me that's a direct clash with my philosophy for coaching. I want every session to be fun. I want every game to be fun. I want them to feel like they can enjoy themselves and take risks and not feel at any time that they're going to be judged or pressured or anything like that. So for a coach who's got that kind of philosophy, who is then dealing with a cohort of players who may not gel with that, what's some of the advice you'd give to those coaches?
Look, and again, this is just it was obviously a snapshot for this year. Yeah. Players and things like that. But again, what you're saying is, from the data that we're taking is really 100% right. It's and again, you can go about this two ways. I agree with you 100%. It should be engaging, fun. You should be getting that sense of connection from the players, offering them environments and games and ideas that really engage them and sort of stretch them in an area that they can really, really respond to. Mm-hmm. But again, and that's where we've got to look at it. So we were looking at a high-performance section of players. These fellas were looking at, individually trying to really develop themselves to excel possibly in later targets within rugby union or earn contracts and things like that. So I guess, speaking, if it was coaches involved in these high performance across the globe or whoever's listening, really try and develop that sense of connection. Give them a reason of why. Why should they invest or why should they do these things? We really got to support them, but support them from almost a safe distance as well, if that makes sense, because especially for these age-graded players, I have three kids and you have kids as well. If you tell some of these age-grade athletes or players of late adolescence, early adulthood, if you tell them what to do, then they're going to respond with some element of resistance. If you offer them a why and sort of step back, a sort of Vygotsky and zone of proximal development, as is within the research, scaffold around them, let them build and be there for that support when they want it and when they need it. I was speaking to involved in something with the NRL there the other day, and again their technique they're rolling out to new coaches as well is observe first and then really assess whether to step in or step back.
Yeah,
and that's what it should be for these high performance environments. Let them at the end. I was speaking to a coach the other day. It's like for these high performance players and adolescent athletes, you can offer them two things. You want them to draw a picture. You can offer them a dot to dot. Mm-hmm. They can draw. You're going to get pretty much. The picture you're going to get pretty much. If you're very autocratic, authoritarian, tell them what to do. You pretty much know the drawing you're going to get. All right. If you offer, as you said, an inclusive atmosphere where you offer them a clean blank piece of paper with a pile of macaroni and glue and glitter and all this type of stuff. Offer them games and sort of fun environment to be in. Sometimes you might get a mess of a drawing, but sometimes you might get something that's really cool and you'll really enjoy. They'll really respond to, the group around them will go, that's cool. Let's keep trying this way as well. So it's tough. It is tough, especially with these emerging, high performance athletes, these adolescents where, again, as I said, they've got a melting pot of emotions and a lot of things going on as well. So
That lends itself to what are the coaching techniques in the high performance environment? They would need to be I don't think it's any different personally. Whether I'm coaching 14-year-olds or 30-year-olds, I coach the same way. I'll roll out some fun games where guys get to crawl along the ground in a warm up like a gorilla, and then they'll actually go into a some kind of breakdown activity that transfers into that, and then it'll be a, you know, fun offloading game or something like that. That's gonna bring out that side of you know, the enjoyment side of things. But if on the other hand you've got a very drills-based coach that's very regimented, that's going to be a clash of what you're talking about there, right?
Absolutely, and that's it. Yeah, at the end of the day, you can incorporate fun in games, and the players are going to find their levels around them as well. They're going to if you offer them, it's all about, as a coach, it's really about that social engagement, that element of connection. Give them the reason why, and then be confident enough essentially to step away, mm-hmm. and offer them, you know, a strong, inclusive environment where they can, push and test themselves and their mates around them, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden you'll get that real sort of, as you say, sense of connection, and you'll understand, you'll see it sort of organically grow essentially into something that they really want to buy into and, mm-hmm. and develop, and, yeah. And again, yeah, as you said, that's our role of coaches, really, isn't it? It's more about that social side of things and the connection side of things, as opposed to, yeah, as you said, if it's very drilled and top heavy, then yeah, at best you're going to get compliance and mm. you may even get defiance, so it's difficult, but again, it's all about as well time management. That's again, we all, you're getting these even at this high performance end, they're only getting them. Jason Gilmore said it when I went and spoke to him. It was, you'll come from a school environment where these fellas, you'll have contact time. You could have as much as when he was at Churchy, he said, he would get as much contact time as, say, 15, 16 hours a week with some of these fellas. Mm. All of a sudden they've exited school, gone into the high performance environment, and they've got other commitments, other things going on. All of a sudden that contact time is reduced, say 4 or 5 hours.
Yeah.
So it's hard. Yeah. It's hard to both establish that sense of connection and, develop them as the players need. But again, yeah, that's the juggle. That's how we're going to work it out. So. Mm.
Cool. Awesome. Well, I mentioned earlier on, you run a fantastic blog, titled Coaching the Coaches, and I'll make sure I put a link up in the show notes about that with the Twitter handle as well. Before we talk about that, I've got to talk about the banner that you have on your Twitter page, where it's got the cartoon of the girl dribbling a soccer ball around cones, saying, every practice we dribble around these cones, but we never play against cones in games. That one's a beauty. That probably speaks volumes to what you're trying to get across in that blog.
Yeah. Well, it's a big thing, and it's something that I've talked about with a lot of sort of age grade coaches around here, because even around Brisbane, you may struggle sometimes to say, and I'm sure you've been through it as well, sometimes you'll struggle to get, 15 players show up for a training session. Mm-hmm. And as opposed to going through, say, a Thursday night team run or whatever, a Friday afternoon team run or whatever it might be, I've always said, well, let's split up. If you've got 15, let's play 8v7. Because, again, they're going to grab a lot more from that. And again, you can vary the game. You can start with a narrow field, a wider field, different forms of scoring, where, how do they score, where do they score, having your forwards kick the ball or something like that. Just things where, again, you're creating that sense of engagement. They're getting a run around. They're getting more touches of the ball. It's much more, it feels much more like a dynamic environment that they mm-hmm. want to be involved in. So that's especially with, there's, numbers are somewhat, especially in the longer form of the game, and Australia are starting to dwindle. We've really got to start thinking, as you said, that let's step away from this drill and task focused environment to, all right, let's offer a sort of fun, inclusive, game based environment where, again, there's just going to be more movement, more touches, more opportunities for creativity, essentially, as well.
Yeah, so. Yeah, no, I totally agree. Couldn't agree more. And the more that kids can get exposure to, the game, actually playing it rather than practicing some things that are not dynamic and things that don't act, they may actually happen once in a game and they spend 20 minutes of it in a session. The more we can get away from that and move into a more chaotic, unpredictable environment, the better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, cool. Well, one of the things that stands out is you've written quite a few articles about lessons from coaches and athletes across different sports, different codes. What have been a few of the big ones for you in your time since running the blog that that rugby coaches can really take away from?
Again, we've touched on it a fair bit already, is, you know, just becoming that sort of player-centered learning. You know, really, you know, letting the players almost take a bit of control as well. You know, right? Letting them. I've tried to do a few games where we start off with an initial game, and then you'll get a couple of the other players to change some of the rules or some of what's going on as well, because then they buy into it. You know, there's greater buy-in, and because at the end of the day, that's what you want. You'll turn up, as I say, for an hour and a half session. You want as much engagement, as much movement, as much. You know, I mean, the fellas testing themselves, because again, we as coaches, we don't step over the paint. It's really about them. So letting them drive, you know, whatever, you know, from the bare minimals, from, you know, I mean, what time we turn up, right through to the big expectations. How, you know, what are we here for? What's the big why? What's our common goals as a team this year? So the more we involve players in that, the greater buy-in you'll get, and yeah, as I say, the more sense of responsibility and passion they'll have towards the team. But and again, it talks about, yeah, I've spoken, you know, I mean, a couple of times, like, yeah, with coaches or researchers like Cliff Mallett, Stephen Wren. We even have Wade Gilbert in Australia, chatting to him. And again, he talks about Coach Wooden, about, and again, it's almost hard to say in a rugby environment, but Coach Wooden says, you know, one of the big things is love. You know, I mean, it's a real sense of connection, sense of care, getting to know your players on a one-to-one level. You know, and so then if there is something going on, or if there's something that's just not right or just not there, you can have that open and honest conversation, you know, on a one-to-one level as well. But yeah, coming back, even that coach-led learning, you can see I've used in one of my blog posts, Steve Kerr, the NBA basketball coach. Like, he allowed, you know, the this is at a high performance level, because again, some of the coaches say, this is age grade stuff. You can't do this. You know, I mean, it only happens at the high performance level. Well, Steve Kerr, yes, he handed the whiteboard over at halftime for one of the Warriors games, and let those, I think, awesome. Guardiola or whatever. Yeah, that's it. He let him take over halftime. But again, if you go to Twitter sphere now, you'll see blokes like Mark Bennett and Stu Armstrong putting up, you know, they're letting their age grade athletes take over at halftime, because again, they're out there, they're on the field, they see what's happening, they can have, it's a greater sense of responsibility to. If they can say, well, look, we need to do this, we can, you know, I mean, coach or change things or do something on the run. Ultimately, that's what we as coaches want. It's greater engagement for them. It'll probably improve the outcomes, because, yeah, you're trying to focus, you know, I mean, on almost too many areas, and let them take a sense of ownership and responsibility for what they want to do. So,
yeah, cool. And what about, continuing with some of the stuff you've done on the blog, what about some of the high-profile rugby coaches that you've learned from? You've written a few pieces on different coaches. Who have been some of the people that you've gotten some really big learnings from there?
Oh, look, I come back to, one of the articles I wrote last. I was in Liverpool actually presenting some of this research a couple of years ago, and Eddie Jones was one of the keynote speakers, and got to chat to him afterwards as well. And again, he was really good about, this echoes, you know, some of the research that's been done by Cliff Mallett and a few other people's, where the real high performance coaches and the coaches at the top end, they want to keep learning. They have a thirst for learning. They read, they ask questions. It's not closed book. Like, that's what Eddie Jones, you know, I mean, he addressed it. And again, this was, you know, a multitude of sports. It was as part of the International Coaching Council in Liverpool. He addressed it to a multitude of sports. He says, look, you can come, you can ask questions. I'll tell you what I'm doing. He says, because I'm constantly evolving. He says, by the time you've copied me, I've probably already changed. He says, you've got to be in tune with whom you're coaching, how you're coaching, and, you know, what the content is as well. Right? That's, you've just got to keep constantly reading, constantly looking things up. Again, he was quite good to see as well, because he would go around and was talking to a multitude of other coaches in other sports and things like that, just trying to grab little bits, little ideas and things like that of how to essentially better engage with his players, and I mean, it's not solely focused on the drills and little things that you do. It's how do you get better engagement, better buy-in by your players, and that's from your grassroots under sixes all the way up to your high performance.
Yeah, Eddie's great, and what I've found from this podcast, running the podcast, is exactly what you're saying there, is they really people want to discuss their passions. One, because they love it, but also to get ideas and to grow and to evolve. And, you know, you saw that with when the book Legacy came out about the All Blacks. How initially they were, I think Wade Gilbert wrote about this in his book. Now initially they were upset about it because they didn't realise it was going to be a book that was so in depth. And then they reflected about it and thought, well, no, it's part of what we do, and you know, we it's now forcing us to change. So let's change and continue to grow. So yeah, I think that's great.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, as you said, it's becoming more prolific in the high performance environments. Again, Matt Wiltley, actually an Australian bloke, he's now head of coaching in Ireland for the RFU. But again, that's one of the areas that he's talked about, is developing these communities of practice, especially in the likes of Ireland. You know, it's different for yourself in Canada or us in Australia. In Ireland, they've got multitude of, you know, I mean, different sports teams, you know, I mean, very close proximity to each other, and they don't talk, they don't share ideas. Yeah. You know, you could really develop new ideas, new techniques, new ways for doing things on a very, very easy level. You know, I mean, just talk to, you know, your local, you know, football club, or like they've started to speak to the Gaelic football teams and things like that as well. Yeah. There's so many ways and ideas. That's it. Yeah, 100%. I guess, yeah. I think even the RFU are looking at Gaelic football players for their sevens team, because as you said, they're so, you know, the handball eye coordination, speed, a lot of time on the deck and things like that. That's what I mean. We really need to sort of pay attention to other sports and have a look on how they do things, why they do things as well, and try and get some more crossover as well. But yeah, I think it's just trying to improve that engagement with our players on different ideas and techniques, essentially.
Cool. And all right, and the last bit on your blog there, one of the articles also talks about some of the time you spent with the Australian under 20 team in the build up to the Oceania U20 tournament. I think was that 2016 or 2017?
Yeah, I think it was 2017. Yeah,
2017. Yep. Okay, cool. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What was that experience like? That would have been pretty sweet. And what were some of the coaching kind of lessons you got from that?
Yeah, it was cool. It was sort of twofold. I was really fortunate that Adrian Thompson, Tomo, invited me down to speak to the pathway coaches and coordinators about my research and explain to them, well, look, this is what we found, and allow them to stew on a few ideas and have a few takeaways. But there was also some of the other coaches across Brisbane, including myself, were invited down. Head coach Jason Gilmore ran a session on a Wednesday night and allowed us to ask questions. And even Shane Arnold and Rudy Murphy were there, and again, offer a bit more of an insight. But yeah, like I mentioned before, Jason Gilmore, he was talking about that player contact time, what steps can you take and how can you build that sense of connection and help them, you know, build resilient athletes, you know, help build their mental skills. They were trying to build from this Oceania tournament, India World Cup, and they were trying to extend ideas of what they do and why. A big thing they talked about was the 360-degree review. So again, like we've talked about, having that sense of connection where you can have an open and honest conversation about, well, you know, what were you thinking here? Why were you trying this? And again, not necessarily criticism, but as I say, more feedback. I say, well, next time let's try this, and you know, I mean, what do we need to work on? What other things can we add to our game, or can you add to your game to improve in the future? So they used STEEL as their acronym. They were going towards the World Cup, which stood for sacrifice, team first, effort, excellence, and loyalty. So again, that, and I found that interesting because then from the answers I got from the fellows involved in the high performance section, that really tied in with the individual driven, you know, achievement focus. We're talking the level of sacrifice these players have to make, you know, acknowledgement of effort, acknowledgement of excellence, more so they used excellence, that was more so focusing on the attacking style of play. They really want to relate to, you know, the age grade Wallabies and senior Wallabies teams of the past, where, you know, they become a real attacking force. And again, that loyalty, so that really commitment and buy-in. So when you're involved in this high performance section, there was real buy-in to what they were doing and why they were doing it. So again, it was nice to get that, you know, I mean, especially from Gilly, to hear that sort of tied in with the information we were getting when the fellas are involved in these high performance environments. that was kind of what's expected as well.
So, yeah, cool. And on the 360 degree review, how was that run? How did that look in a training week?
They had like a formalized document which he shared with us, mm-hmm. and then they would sit down with one of the players and at least one of the coaches, and they would talk about what they've done. The players would rank themselves, the coaches would review their ranking and things like that, and again ask questions for why. And again, it was sometimes he said, look, players would score themselves, my passing or my distribution has been scored at a 2, but the coaches actually scored it at a 4. And again, it's trying to then lift them to the standards that the coaches actually see in them, giving them that honest feedback so again that they can work and develop their game as they need to, essentially. So it was a fairly interesting. Again, it was trying to then they use that as a bit of a blueprint, so if the fellas do move into a more senior environment, then that information is retained by Rugby Australia and the coaches. And then they can recognise that when they enter into, say, a senior environment or different environments that the Rugby Australia has to offer. So, yeah.
All right, cool. Well, you kind of mentioned earlier that, Aussie rugby is going through a patch right now. And, one of the common threads in conversations and debate is about the state of grassroots rugby, where it should be, where it was, those kind of things. So for you looking on in the Brisbane area, what is the state of grassroots rugby like from what you're seeing? And if you could wave your magic wand, what would you implement to try and improve areas?
Look, a lot of the stuff we've touched on already, again, this has been at various conferences and spoke to about my research to the likes of Rod Kafer. Mm-hmm. And again, he's acknowledged the fact that we're very, very, drill focused. You'll turn up to a rugby field on a training night, and you'll see a lot of kids standing about. We're doing lineouts, we're doing a lot of set piece, a lot of your sort of set plays and things like that. But we really just need to move with the ball. And again, to credit where credit's due, Rugby Australia really tried to introduce and push the likes of Crossfield Sevens. Push the Sevens program again like that as well. So there is a lot more involvement, engagement, movement of the ball. At the end of the day, we know the great Australian teams of the past, we're talking your Ella brothers, your Campese, even to some extent John Eales. We're talking a second rower who kick goals, to win a Bledisloe Cup. That these aren't picked up from standing around watching other people do it. It's from movement, it's from doing, it's from playing games, we need to step away, or not necessarily step away, because there is the need for a close skill and skill focus to really fine tuning some areas of the game. Mm-hmm. But again, who are we to at the end of the day, if a player hits a pass, 5-10 meters away, but doesn't lead with his outside arm or something, these real fine details that we drill into, at the end of the day, it's more about the action. It's more that let's really focus on just playing and creativity and a lot more games-based focus. And again, you'll see a lot more countries across the world are doing it. Like there's obviously the fellas like the Magic Academy in England. I know you've had Rusty on the show, who I messaged a few times via Twitter and things like that. Like, this is what they're looking for. They're trying to both challenge kids on the ground. All right, let's play a game, and let's try this and this and things like that, and even try and challenge coaches as well. With say, you're only allowed to speak 3 times and things like that. Things like that as well. We really got to put ourselves a bit into the uncomfortable. To try and push ourselves from where we are, because as you said, it's slightly rigid at this stage. It's trying to get it more fluent and more, because again, especially in Queensland, you look at the age grade players coming through, and even the strength of the Queensland or the Brisbane local comp, the Premier Rugby comp, some fantastic players coming through. Fantastic players coming through, and again, who can do things. And again, is this because there's that more contact time and greater feeling connection to the clubs they're playing with? Not sure. And again, our fellas extracted into the high performance environment too early, where they don't learn what it's like to build up these skills and how to transition from, say, school into senior rugby. Not sure. But again, there's, for me, and that's speaking to Big Mick Byrne as well, who mentioned that there was a conference that was at, you know, we're too focused on the fine details. You know, let's sweat less on the little stuff and focus more on, all right, let's play. You know, I mean, focus on, you know, the main things, go forward. How to pass, how to tackle, you know, those are the main things. We obviously still have a duty of care for age grade athletes, but yeah, let's play. You know what I mean? And who knows, they might show us something weird and wonderful. You know,
yeah.
We don't know.
So. Yeah, I think Mick Byrne would offer a great perspective with his time with the All Blacks and now being full time with the Wallabies. I think there's someone that I think could really be a really positive guiding force for coach development in Australia.
Yeah, that's it. 100%. Yeah.
Cool. Awesome. All right. Well, we always end the show with the same final four questions. When you were a kid growing up, who was one of the rugby players that really jumped out at you and started, you know, getting you excited about the game?
When I first really took up the game, I started off at fullback. So again, it's hard to go past Christian Coleman.
Yeah.
It was just the speed, you know, again, you look at the speed he put on the line break and the speed he hit the ball and things like that. How, again, we look, you know, there's a lot of heavy sidesteps now, and again, it's great to see in the game at the moment, but you barely seen him take a sidestep or anything like that. He just hit the ball hard and he would sort of glide over the grass and round the players and things like that. Yeah, he was awesome to watch. Yeah,
I agree. He's up there for me too. Yeah, absolute beauty. All right, and what about now? Who are some of the players going around that you like watching?
I'm going to cheat slightly because, obviously from Ireland, but now based in Australia. So Johnny Sexton.
Yeah.
Just this week he signed in a contract extension to 2021. So from everything he's achieved, and again, the focus and attention to detail he has, like you'll see, he still, you know, works on his kicking on a daily basis with the now Reds kicking coach Dave Aldred. You could see just his attention to detail and even, you know, that passion and drive and desire to get better, you know, continues right into his early 30s and things like that. Mm. Yeah, I just find him fascinating. But and again, locally, David Prokop, it's just on a combination, a couple of things actually. Look, how he obviously manages himself, his body. He takes an absolute hammer in pretty much every game he's on because of the positions he puts into himself. But again, his integrity, you know, I mean, off the field as well. Mm. You know, he's a real sort of shining light that, you know, I mean, players, you know, male, female, all involved in the game can look up to because, he has that element of integrity off the field as well. You know, he's very open and honest and follows a few charities and things like that. Mm. It's really good to see, you know, I mean, a bloke like him offering a shining light for players coming through.
Yeah, and I like that Johnny re-signed. He didn't, you know, you can't fault people for doing this, but often the traditional route out of international rugby is to a couple of years in France or Japan or something like that. Mm-hmm. But the fact he's going to finish off his career in Ireland, I think that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, cool. And what about coaches who you've obviously, read a lot about a bunch of coaches, met a bunch of coaches who have been some of the ones that are really stood out for you and you like what they're doing?
Look, there's a real Kiwi twinge to it. Fortunate enough to have gone to a few coaching conferences, you know, I mean, mostly within Australia, but even overseas as well. Mm-hmm. A lot of the Kiwi contingent, they seem to just, they've got this, calmness and assuredness about them and really focusing that personal touch as well. Like Robbie Deans, excellent. You know, I mean, again, really sort of connects with players.
Yeah.
Graham Henry was fortunate to speak to when he came to Australia recently. And again, he was very good in that he was humble. He recognized when he left Wales, he wasn't doing a good job.
Mm.
And he really, again, like we talked about before, as high performance coach, he essentially went back. He pushed himself back down the coaching ranks to go, well, I need to learn again, or I need to apply my ideas and what I believe in coaching and build his way back up again. Razor Robinson. Ian was lucky to speak to him at the he was at a conference for the Brisbane Tens, I think last year or something like that. Again, and a very personable bloke. You know, doesn't take himself too seriously, obviously with his breakdancing and things like that as well. But even so when cool. he was speaking, 100%. I wish I could do it, but how he even, you know, he just doesn't stress. You know, again, focuses on establishing strong connection. He says, look, I've got a real strong connection with Whitelock, his captain. And he says their ideals, what they want from it. And again, he lets the players lead it. Again, all these coaches say as well, you know, towards the end of the week, you heard Steve Hansen talk about it recently. Mm. It's all player driven. It's all, you know, by the end of the week, you know, the All Blacks coaches are out of it. You know, Friday's player day. They work it out. They take charge of it here because, again, they step over the paint. You know, I mean, you instill, you know, I mean, why and what's important to you and things like that, and then let the players paint the picture for what that looks like. So,
yeah, that's great. Awesome. All right, and last question there, who's someone in your local area that's doing great work and deserves some recognition?
I'll give a shout out to the people involved at University of Queensland Sports Coaching Group as well. So there's a few rugby ones involved there, but we draw upon a multitude of sports as well. So that's led by Cliff Mallett and Stephen Wren. So again, it's really good, and we welcome in people like Pat Richards was there, who's just taken over head of coaching at the Reds. So we offer ideas, and just like we're doing now, and have a chat and share, like we said before, communities of practice and what we can offer. But even there's blokes like Greg Nelson, Mick Tunney, who are involved at West and running a good Colts program at West. I've been involved with those fellas as well in some age grade and junior goal stuff. And then the fellas, there's Elton, Marius, Paul Farmer, who were at UQ. And again, they had a bit of a gun squad in the couple of years we were involved there. You know, looks like Shambui, Connor Murray, Alex Horan, other players to mention. So, but again, they created a real inclusive, fun atmosphere to be in. So again, they could have got really bogged down with focusing on. Obviously, you got a real strong group of players, and the focus obviously was on that Premier Colts flag. But again, they still created that fun, inclusive environment to be part of as well, which again ultimately got them. They did get the flag, so yeah, ultimately got them that. But if they had gone another way and been fairly directive and authoritarian, then it could have went another way. That's it. It could have went another way for sure. So
cool, awesome. All right, Johnny. Well, it's been great chatting to you about your research and about your blog. I think there's some awesome learnings there for coaches, no matter where they're based. So yeah, I really appreciate you giving up your time and thanks for talking about it, and good luck with wrapping up your masters.
Thanks very much. Thanks very much for the invite again. And
yeah, no dramas. Cool.
Thanks for listening to the Rugby Coaches Corner podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please leave a review via iTunes and keep listening for the next episode. You can also follow us via Twitter at RugbyCoachesCNR or via the website therugbycoachescorner.com. Until next time, keep sharing ideas to make the game better.